Now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines 40 years. They just keep going back to the same misconduct, misbehavior that we've seen over and over again. And this, in this case, it was the Philistines that oppressed them for 40 years, double the time of the next longest period of oppression in the Judges. God is punishing them even more. And this time, there's something that is missing that's found in the other accounts. We have no indication that they cried to the Lord, that they appealed to him. They seem to have more or less conformed themselves to the fact that the Philistines were their rulers. And you can see that as we continue in the narrative. So in verse 2, there was a certain man of Zorah, the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had borne no children. Then the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said to her, "Behold, now you are barren and have borne no children, but you shall conceive and give birth to a son. Now therefore, be careful not to drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. For behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Then the woman came and told her husband, saying, "A man of God came to me, and his appearance was like the appearance of the angel of God, very awesome. And I did not ask him where he came from, nor did he tell me his name. But he said to me, 'Behold, you shall conceive and give birth to a son, and now you shall not drink wine or strong drink, nor any unclean thing, eat any unclean thing. For the boy shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death.'" God can bring life from barren places. He works in bleak and difficult circumstances. And really, a lot of times, those form the context for wonderful things like this birth of Samson. And God here is, through his angel, giving instructions to Samson's mother, because really consecration to God should begin with the parents. So the mother is not to drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. Of course, really, the Israelites as a whole shouldn't have been doing that. And she's being specifically asked not to do that in connection with the birth of this special son. But then her son is going to be a Nazarite. The Nazarite vow is found in Numbers chapter 6. It was a collection of rules about grapes and carcasses and hair for a period of time that people would take voluntarily as a period of a vow to God, to especially commit themselves to God during this period of time. Well, in Samson's case, this was extraordinary, because it was imposed by God. Normally, it was a voluntary thing that a person would choose to take a vow for a period of time. But in this case, God imposes that. It's imposed from the moment of birth in Samson's case. Normally, it was just a period of time. You know, you'd maybe take a vow, the Nazarite vow, for a few months or something like that. And it's to be permanent, not temporary. So Samson is to be a lifetime Nazarite, specially committed to God. There's emphasis on the Nazarite in terms of the grapes and the hair. Perhaps the carcass part does not apply to Samson because of his special role. He was supposed to be delivering, or at least beginning to deliver, the Israelites from the Philistines, which will involve contact with people that he kills. And so Manoah wanted more instructions. The angel comes back to the woman, and she goes and gets her husband, but the angel basically says the same thing. Manoah wanted to feed the angel. He said, "No, but you can offer a sacrifice." By the way, I misstated myself a couple of days ago with Gideon. I was thinking about this event. Gideon did offer a sacrifice to the angel that appeared to him, but did not try to feed the angel. But in this case, Manoah did. But the angel said, "No, you can offer a sacrifice." And the angel went up in the flame of the sacrifice. And obviously Manoah recognized then, this is an angel of the Lord. And he said, you know, he's really afraid. He's seen the manifestation of God, and he's, he feels like God's going to kill him. And his wife said, well, God probably wouldn't have accepted the sacrifice and appeared twice and promised a son if he intended to kill you, which was pretty good logic, I think, in this situation. And sure enough, the woman gave birth in verse 24 to a son, named him Samson, and the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him in Mahaneh Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. Now, Samson is really a story in wasted potential. There are some special things about Samson that really would make you think he's going to do wonderful things for the Lord. For one thing, he was called by God before he was born. He was filled with the Spirit of God from early days. He was given extraordinary capabilities and opportunities. And he receives more attention space-wise in the book of Judges than any other deliverer. But with all that potential, we'll see he did not fulfill it very well. So in chapter 14, then Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. So he came back and told his father and mother, I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and his mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your relatives or among all of our people that you go to take a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? But Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she looks good to me. However, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Now at that time, the Philistines were ruling over Israel. With Samson, the quality of the judges reaches an all-time low. And there's just a lot of emphasis on the fact she was a Philistine, and he's supposed to be delivering Israel from the Philistines, and he falls in love with this Philistine woman. Now, he was from the tribe of Dan, and the original placement of the tribe of Dan was kind of on the edge of the Philistine territory. And he has a real thing, we'll see as time goes on, for Philistine women for whatever reason. Now, in Samson, there is a fatal noun-verb combination. When in Samson you combine the verb to see with the noun woman, it gives him a problem. From time to time, you'll see another woman. And that just drives Samson's life. And remember what he says as he answers his parents, she looks good to me. You know, it pleases him, she pleases him visually. And I think it's worth saying that appearance is not the key to relationships. We live in this beauty-crazed culture where we're just so obsessed with what we look like and what the girl looks like and what the guy looks like. That is not the most important thing. 1 Peter 3 is clear. We ought to be more worried about inner beauty than outer. I want you to think about this. Beauty is so subjective. I spend a lot of time in Brazil. And in general, it's kind of funny. Brazilian men like their women a little fuller figured. They appreciate that. They think that's more beautiful. And they like them lighter. You know, American women are going to tanning beds, and you look at the beauty queens, and they're, you know, 5 feet, 10, you know, 80 pounds. Who's to say? Have you ever noticed pictures of the beauty queens from like 60 years ago or even 40 years ago or 80 years ago? And you're thinking, whoa, that's the best they had back then? You know, because they really look bad to us now, the way they fix themselves up and things like that has changed so much that some of them almost look hideous to us now, but back then they were seen as beautiful. Beauty is a subjective thing. Who's to say what is the most beautiful? It all depends on how you look at it. Haven't you ever met somebody and you thought, oh, she's pretty, and then you got to know her, and she was just really horrible, spiteful, selfish, prideful, and she didn't even look good anymore? You know, how you see the person needs to affect how you see her beauty. So if your main criteria for finding a woman is she looks good to me, maybe you ought to think a little more deeply than that. Now, literally, he says, she's right in my eyes. And we're going to see tomorrow night and Friday night how that becomes a theme in the end of the book of Judges. We must not allow our eyes and what we think of as right, our own feelings, our own desires, to rule over us. But all of this contributed to God's purpose. Did you see that in verse 4? God was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Now, God often uses free human actions to accomplish his purpose. Samson has no idea he's actually contributing to God's will, but God used his passion for Philistine women for his own good. God did not want people to live in peace with the Philistines. But left to themselves, Israel seemed to be just totally okay with the fact the Philistines are, they're the ones that rule over us. So he used Samson's thing for Philistine women to create enmity and problems between the Philistines and the Israelites so that the Philistines could be defeated. Now, the fact that God uses Samson's love for Philistine women does not mean God approved of that. Just because God uses you doesn't necessarily mean he's happy with what you're doing. God is able to use wicked actions to contribute to his purpose. So, verse 5, then Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came as far as the vineyards of Timnah. And behold, a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily so that he tore him as one tears a young goat. Yeah, you know how that is, right? Though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or mother what he'd done. So he went down and talked to the woman, and she looked good to Samson. When he returned later to take her, he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the body of the lion. So he scraped the honey into his hands and went on eating as he went. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them, and they ate it, but he did not tell them that he had scraped the honey out of the body of the lion. Now, I am not sure what a lifetime Nazirite is doing in a vineyard. He's foolishly endangering his vow. He was to have nothing to do with grapes or grape products. He kills this lion with his bare hands, just like you kill a goat. And, he later finds the honey in it. Now, that honey is unclean because it's been in contact with this dead animal. I think that's why he didn't tell his parents. I bet they wouldn't have eaten it if they'd have known where it came from. Think about, there's so many times that the Old Testament echoes earlier stories. Samson saw the honey. He took the honey. He ate the honey. And he gave it to someone else who ate the honey. Does that remind you of anything? So then his father went down to the woman in verse 10, and Samson made a feast there, for the young men customarily did this. When they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. Then Samson said to them, "Let me now propound a riddle to you. If you will indeed tell it to me within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. But if you are unable to tell me, then you shall give me 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes." And they said to him, "Propound your riddle that we may hear it." So he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." But they could not tell the riddle in 3 days. Now, there's this party Samson throws. I think the word originally had to do with a drinking party, something Samson shouldn't even have attended, much less sponsored. But it's kind of for like the wedding party. And he offers to tell this riddle and kind of wager on it, these changes of clothes. Okay, they're up for that. They can figure out his riddle in a week. Well, right. You know, his riddle reflects his own unique experience. There's no way the Philistines will figure that out. How do they know Samson killed the lion and got honey out of it? So he really tells them kind of a riddle that was unfair. There's no way they could have known that. And they figure out that they can't figure it out. So look at verse 15. Then it came about on the fourth day that they said to Samson's wife, that is the one he was marrying, entice your husband so that he will tell us the riddle, or we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us to impoverish us? Is this not so? So Samson's wife wept before him and said, you only hate me and you do not love me. You propounded a riddle to the sons of my people and have not told it to me. And he said to her, behold, I have not told it to my father or mother, so should I tell you? However, she wept before him 7 days while their feast lasted. And on the seventh day, he told her because she pressed him so hard. She then told the riddle to the sons of her people. So the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would have not found out my riddle. The Philistines did everything they could to the woman, pressured her, threatened her, and with this kind of an incentive, she doesn't want her house burned down on her and her father, she pulls out all the stops to try to find out from Samson, and it paid dividends. Samson may be able to kill a lion, but he can't stand the tears of a woman. And so they won the wager by solving the riddle right before the deadline, and Samson accuses them of cheating. He said, if you hadn't plowed with my heifer, you get the idea of that, you would have never known the riddle. He knew where they got it. Why didn't he know not to tell her? You know, it's like, wow. So he's really mad about it. Verse 19, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of them and took their spoil and gave the changes of clothes to those who told the riddle. And his anger burned, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his friend. So Samson's angry. He's not going to buy the clothes. He just kills 30 Philistines and gets the clothes off of their back and gives them to him. And he's pretty upset, so he goes home in a huff. And his father-in-law assumes that he doesn't want anything more to do with his woman, so he marries her off to some other guy. Well, chapter 15, after a while, in the time of wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a young goat and said, I will go into my wife in her room, but her father did not let him enter. Her father said, I really thought that you hated her intensely, so I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Please let her be yours instead. So Samson comes with a young goat to his who he thinks is his wife. I don't know if a young goat was the ancient counterpart of a box of chocolates or what, but, you know, Samson really hadn't intended to just end the marriage, you know, but his father-in-law didn't understand that, and so he had made the best of the bad situation, finding his daughter another husband, so he can't really let him go into her. She belongs to another man. He said, but I've got a great consolation prize. Her sister's even better looking than she is. Well, Samson doesn't quite agree. Verse 3, Samson then said to them, this time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. Samson went and caught 300 foxes. The word there may be jackals, but at any rate, took torches and turned the foxes tail to tail and put one torch in the middle between two tails. When he had set fire to the torches, he released the foxes into the standing grain of the Philistines, thus burning up both the shocks and the standing grain, along with the vineyards and groves. Then the Philistines said, who did this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. Samson said to them, since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that I will quit. He struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Edom. Something you can see in Samson. He does kill a lot of Philistines, but it's more a personal vendetta. He spent his whole life doing what he chose to, what he wanted to. He wasn't trying so much to rid Israel of foreign oppressors as he was just trying to get revenge, thinking he's got the right to get revenge. He never calls out the Israelite troops. He's never trying to make an offensive against the Philistines in and of themselves. He's just using his personal grudges to kill some Philistines. Now, in this case, Once he sets fire, can't you imagine those foxes or jackals or whatever with their tails tied together and fire in between them? And they were going off helter-skelter and burned up everything, and so they burn the girl and her father, so much for her trying to avoid that, right? And it's probably easier for them to deal with her and her father than it was to deal with Samson in view of his great strength. And so Samson slaughters the Philistines, and he says, I just want one more time. You know, after this, I'll quit. Now, isn't that the way revenge is? It's always, well, now I need to get even. Well, then they need to get even. And, you know, so think about how this is. The Philistines are going to come down and try to get Samson for killing their people. But he killed them because they killed his wife and her father. But they did that because Samson had burned their fields. But he did that because his father-in-law gave away his wife. But he did that because Samson had gotten angry and left. But he did that because his wife gave the riddle's answer away. But she did that to avoid being burnt up, her and her father, and so forth and so on. Think about the way vengeance is. It's always like that. It's a chain. It just goes endlessly. And that's what we see. Everybody feels like their revenge is justified. Everybody's always just evening the score. That's what they all think on all sides. You know, we do that same thing with sin. You ever thought about that? Just one more, and then I'll be done. Right. That's all Satan ever wants from us, is just one more. That's all it takes. We never stop sinning by sinning one more time. In verse 9, then the Philistines went up and camped in Judah and spread out in Lehi. The men of Judah said, why have you come up against us? And they said, we have come up to bind Samson in order to do to him as he did to us. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Etam and said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us? And he said to them, as they did to me, so I have done to them. They said to him, We have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. And Samson said to them, swear to me that you will not kill me. So they said to him, no, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands, yet surely we will not kill you. Then they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. Now think about what's going on here. This personal feud becomes an international crisis, which I think is what God was wanting. He was wanting the Israelites to fight against the Philistines. But the Israelites, they're mad at Samson. They're like, don't you know the Philistines rule over us? What did you think you were doing? They're not crying out for a deliverer. They're trying to get rid of the deliverer. They resent the confusion that he's causing. They've just decided to be content with Philistine domination. Christians are like that sometimes. They don't want anybody to interfere with what Satan's doing. You know, it's like, well, there's just certain sins you're just going to commit. And, you know, just kind of like, we need to adjust to it. You know, we just accept that. And so they don't want Samson fighting against the Philistines. They send 3,000 men to bind him. That's a real tribute to his strength, isn't it? Would it take 3,000 men to bind one guy? Well, he says, you can do it. Promise you won't kill me. Now, why did Samson say that? Do you really think he was afraid of those 3,000 Israelites? I think he didn't want to kill them. So he wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to have to. And he wasn't. And they just wanted to give him over to the Philistines. And so that's what they do. The Israelites and the Philistines are allied against God's chosen deliverer. So look at 14. They brought him bound to the Philistines. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands. He found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, so he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Isn't that amazing? Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I've killed 1,000 men. When he finished speaking, he threw the jawbone from his hand, and he named that place Ramoth-Lehi. So Samson kills 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. then composed a little song to commemorate his achievement, and not one to miss an opportunity to leave his signature on the map, he nicknames it Jawbone Hill, which is what Ramath Lehi means. Then in verse 18, he became very thirsty, and he called to the Lord and said, "You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi so that water came out of it. When he drank, his strength returned, and he revived. Therefore he named it En-Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. For the first time, it seems to me, he encountered a situation he couldn't deal with, his thirst. And he cries out to the Lord, which is a good thing, and the Lord provides him water. And verse 20 would be a good ending to the Samson story. That's how most of the other judge stories end. Except, unfortunately, the story doesn't end there. There's an addendum. Look at chapter 16. "Now Samson went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. When it was told to the Gazites, saying, 'Samson has come here,' they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city, and they kept silent all night, saying, 'Let us wait until the morning light, then we will kill him.' Now Samson lay until midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts and pulled them up along with the bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Hebron." Now, think about how God uses prostitution as a symbol of Israel's unfaithfulness to him. When Samson isn't saving Israel, he's busy being Israel. He's doing very much the same things the Israelites did. He could strangle a lion, but he couldn't control his own desires. And so he went into this prostitute, Philistine prostitute, inside a walled Philistine city. And these passions of his leave him vulnerable to plots on his life. They've got him. They've got him inside a walled city. He can't get out. Well, nobody else could have gotten out. In his case, he doesn't break through the gates. He just grabs them and takes them with him, posts and all, and carries them about 40 miles, mostly uphill, to the highest city in Palestine. It's amazing his strength, and it's amazing his weakness. Physical strength is no necessary indication of moral strength. Well, verse 4, "After this it came about that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, 'Entice him and see where his great strength lies and how we may overpower him that we may bind him to afflict him. Then we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver.'" I'll tell you, the answer to the riddle is Samson's desire for foreign women is what's stronger than a lion. You know, it's just crazy. There's another Philistine woman, and he obsessively repeats the mistakes of the past. He sees her. He goes into her. She pesters him. He will eventually be betrayed in revealing the secret, be bound and given to the hands of the Philistines. It's just amazing. The Philistines see their chance. They want rid of Samson, and they discovered his weakness, Philistine women, and they're out to capitalize on it. They offer her all five of the kings of the Philistine city-states. They each one offer her 1,100 pieces of silver. If you're not good in math, that's 5,500 pieces of silver. That's the 1,100 pieces is three times more than what Gideon received from the Israelites for that ephod. Abraham paid 400 for a burial plot. David paid 50 for oxen and a threshing floor. Jeremiah paid 17 for a field. It was behind enemy lines. 30 was the price of a slave gored to death. 5,500 shekels of silver for Delilah to find out the secret to his strength. And she's pretty businesslike about it. She's about as mercenary as they come. And so in verse 6, Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength is and how you may be bound to afflict you. Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh cords that have not been dried, then I will become weak and be like any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought to her 7 fresh cords that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in wait in an inner room, and she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he snapped the cords as a string of toe snaps when it touches fire, so his strength was not discovered. Then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you have deceived me and told me lies. Now please tell me how you may be bound. He said to her, if they bind me with new ropes which have not been used, then I will become weak and be like any other man. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them, and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. For the men were lying in wait in the inner room, but he snapped the ropes from his arms like a thread. Now, what's Samson doing? He's lying to her. Why is he lying to her? He knows he can't trust her. Ding, ding, ding. Every time he tells her, she tries it. Now, she's sad when he lies to her. Why wouldn't she be? There's 1,100, really 5,500 pieces of silver at stake here. So, in verse 13, then Delilah said to Samson, up to now, you've deceived me and told me lies. Tell me how you may be bound. And he said to her, if you weave the 7 locks of my hair with the web and fasten it with a pin, then I will become weak and be like any other man. So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his hair and wove them into the web, and she fastened it with the pin and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he awoke from his sleep and pulled out the pin of the loom and the web. He's playing with fire here, isn't he? The only strand of the Nazarite vow he's not broken has been he hasn't cut his hair. He doesn't say to cut his hair, but he's starting to talk about the hair. He's weakening. Right now it's 3 for Samson, 0 for Delilah, but you know what's coming. Verse 15, then she said to him, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You've deceived me these 3 times and have not told me where your great strength is. It came about when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him that his soul was annoyed to death. So he told her all that was in his heart and said to her, a razor has never come on my head, for I've been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I am shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I will become weak and be like any other man. When Delilah saw that he had told her all that was in his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up once more, for he has told me all that's in his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees and called for a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his hair. Then she began to afflict him and his strength left him. She said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza, and bound him with bronze chains, and he was a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it was shaved off. He is so vulnerable to women. He wants to mix with the Philistine women. He wants to marry the Philistine women. He wants to party with the Philistines. And so he's lured to his demise by a woman who he knew better than to give in to. And notice, the text does not say that Samson's magical hair gave him his supernatural powers. But the Lord was with him as long as he at least maintained some semblance of the Nazarite commitment. It's when he broke that last strand of the Nazarite vow that the Lord departed from him. The Lord was the secret to his strength. So the Philistines overpowered him and blinded him. Isn't that an appropriate punishment? The eyes were the avenue through which the lust had entered his soul. A man that had been governed by his sight loses his vision. He had to be blinded before he could see. And he's taken to Gaza, the place where he'd committed the sin with the prostitute. Now the lords of the Philistines, verse 23, assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon their god and to rejoice. For they said, our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hands. When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, our God has given our enemy into our hands, even the destroyer of our country has slain many of us. And so it happened, when they were in high spirits, they said, call for Samson, that he may amuse us. So they called for Samson from the prison, and he entertained them. And they made him stand between the pillars. Then Samson said to the boy who was holding his hand, let me feel the pillars on which the house rests, that I may lean against them. Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there, and about 3,000 men and women were on the roof looking on while Samson was amusing them. Then Samson called to the Lord and said, O Lord God, please remember me and please strengthen me just this time, O God, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested and braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bent with all his might so that the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he killed in his life. Then his brothers and all his father's household came down, took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah his father. Thus he had judged Israel 20 years. So they are having some fun at Samson's expense. He's now their entertainment. They can do anything they want to him. He's kind of pathetic. They've turned this, though, into a battle between Dagon, their god, and God. And you know God's not going to let that go without punishing it. So God answered his prayer. Now, did you notice Samson's prayer? There's various ways to read it. Look at verse 28. But I'm not encouraged by this prayer. It looks to me like it's still self-focused. It's still one more time. It's still trying to get vengeance for himself instead of trying to think about God's will and God's agenda. His eyes are still governing his actions. He wants to get vengeance for his eyes. Now, God used him, and God used him a lot right here. The entire upper echelon of Philistine leadership was here, and Samson killed them all. But it's kind of pathetic that he accomplished the most by dying, more than he'd accomplished in his whole life. It's the best thing he ever did for Israel, is when he pulled that house down upon himself and the Philistines. It's a tragic example of a man who had so much potential, but he lacked self-control and he lacked focus. What do we learn from this? Have you ever thought about it this way? What do the strongest man in the Old Testament, Samson, the smartest man in the Old Testament, Solomon, and the most devout man in the Old Testament, David, all have in common? A weakness for women that hurt them so deeply. We must control our eyes, our mind, our heart, our relationships. The world thinks all of this is normal, and we will be bombarded. There's all kinds of things to look at. There's all kinds of talk, and there's going to be plenty of people available anytime you want them. And we are so vulnerable. Somebody comes along, and they just start telling us how great we are and how much they need us and how we just make them feel different than anybody's ever made them feel in their whole life. And we're like Samson, just an ox led to the slaughter. Like, we have no ability to be alert and watchful when Satan is wrapping us around his little finger. So if Samson, who was so strong and had so much potential, ruined his life because he couldn't get his eyes off of Philistine women, there's a lesson for us as people who are seeking to be saints, pure, holy, committed to God. We need to control our eyes, our minds, our hearts, and our relationships. We need to give ourselves wholly to the Lord and let him fill us up. We need to be pure. And God help us do that. And this story needs to really be one that we take to heart. You can see how ridiculous Samson was. The Bible is a mirror. It's designed to help us see ourselves and understand what we need to change. May God help us do that. If you're not a Christian, the world offers a lot of really lame substitutes. And you may be into some sin that you think is filling you up. But I guarantee you, the more you get of it, the less you'll want it. There's nothing in this world that'll fill us up. Only the Lord. And if you've not come to Him and allowed Him to cleanse your sins and make you one of His children, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.